WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Memoirs sure have become popular. They're being written by celebrities, politicians, professors, businessmen, recovered addicts, children of alcoholic parents, and your next-door neighbor. Some of them are brutally honest, some of them are self-promotional and narcissistic. But what is it about the form that is so attractive to writers and readers? That's something Jill Kerr Conway has been thinking about. She's written two widely read memoirs, The Road from Karain and True North, describing her life from her childhood in the Australian outback to becoming the head of Smith College. She's also edited two popular books of women's memoirs. Now she's written a book about autobiography called When Memory Speaks. I asked Jill Kerr Conway a question that she asks in her new book, Why Do So Many People Write Their Life Stories?
Well, I think it is part of the development in our culture, which says that there's really no central point of view from which to look at the world today, so that everybody's story is relevant in some way. And so now we have memoirs written by very young people. Once upon a time, you only wrote toward the end of your life. They're written by people of every ethnic and class background and every sexual orientation. Whereas once upon a time, that terrible experience of poverty would have been fictionalized by a Dickens, or the absolutely appalling experience of incest would have been turned into a novel. Now we have lost most of those senses of what it's appropriate to talk about in the first person, and so much that was previously fiction is now presented as a memoir.
Well, you just really hit on something that I think is very controversial about memoirs. Some people are very kind of disturbed about the idea that the line between public and private has virtually been erased for a lot of people and erased in a lot of memoirs. Memoirs now really do tell everything, the details of incest, for example.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And, of course, I don't think we're the loser for that. Sometimes a person's fictionalized account of some horrible and deeply troubling experience might be more meaningful to the reader, but I think it's good to have to confront troublesome and difficult experiences in the first person, because that's a reality we have to come to terms with.
You know, nowadays a lot of memoirs, no matter how candid they are, aren't actually written by the person allegedly telling the story. They're written by
yes.
a ghostwriter. And
yes.
there's almost a formula that's been created for the autobiographies, particularly the autobiography of a celebrity. And the formula is the opening chapter begins with either the moment of great achievement, and then I got the Academy Award, or the moment of, like, bottoming out, the worst despair. It was my final alcoholic stupor.
yes.
And then that chapter's over, and you're kind of left hanging at this high or at this low. And then chapter two begins, I was born in 19 so-and-so, and my parents,
yes.
blah, 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 blah. And then it slowly makes its way through the story of the person's life. What are some of the formulas that you've seen emerging that you're kind of skeptical about, you know, the way the kind of form has hardened into formula?
Well, the formula that I feel most concerned about is the requirement that a woman present her life as a romance, no matter how driven to achieve, power-hungry, managerial, she nonetheless has to present herself as this charming ingenue for whom everything just happens by accident, even though she has really, through her own drive and ambition, created her life. And that seems to me a prison that distorts the accounts of many, many women's lives and is often imposed on them if there is a ghostwriter present. I think Katharine Graham's memoirs are, in many ways, a wonderful illustration of this point.
And Katharine Graham is the former publisher of the Washington Post.
That's right. And I'm not sure whether the form was imposed by a very determined editor or whether it's really Mrs. Graham's voice speaking herself. But this woman who rescued a failing media empire, turned it into one of the most successful enterprises of our day, and was one of the most powerful figures in Washington making decisions like whether to publish the Pentagon Papers or whether to back the reporters who broke the Watergate story, this woman is presented as though she were the nicest suburban lady who somehow or other just happened to be in these roles but didn't bring them about herself, which is clearly not the case.
I mean, she presents herself as somebody who wasn't really prepared for this life and just kind of inherited it after her husband died and felt unprepared for it but grew into it.
That's right, but she also presents some of the major decisions as ones that she made almost without thought. You know, she tells you what all her advisors told her, and then she says things like, I found myself saying, let's publish, you know, when she must have reasoned about it and reached a rational decision.
I think, you know, memoirs tend to have a certain coherence and shapeliness that real life lacks.
Absolutely.
Real life is usually, you know, very much a muddle, particularly
yes.
as you're going from one experience to another. And, you know, it doesn't have that coherence that a narrative has in book form. And I'm wondering, you know, you've written two memoirs. Did your life take on a shapeliness in book form that it didn't seem to have in real life? What was the difference between your life in that shapely form of the book and your life as it felt like as you lived the parts that you later wrote about?
Well, I think the important thing to remember is that in shaping that narrative, drawing that out of the ebb and flow of very different kinds of experience, you choose the things that seem meaningful to you at the time you're writing. And naturally, what you put into the narrative is shaped by what are important issues to you at the moment of composing that life plot and describing it. So I think if I look back at The Road from Corain, at the point at which I wrote it, the relationship with my mother, who had recently died, and the reasons why I left Australia were absolutely compelling to me. And so the narrative of my life takes its form around those issues. And of course, since I'm a strong feminist, I also wanted the narrative to drive home the point that I'm writing about two generations of Australian women who couldn't contribute what they might have to their society because of their being female. Were I to write that story today, you know, I've come to a much different understanding of my mother, partly from being widowed myself. The things that drove me out of Australia seem less important to me, and I would probably construct the narrative quite differently. But that doesn't mean to say that it wasn't true at the time I wrote it. And if I think about the second volume of my memoirs, True North, one of the things that I wanted to convey as clearly as I could was that it's possible for a professional woman to form a very deep and powerful marriage relationship and yet retain a bounded identity and a strong professional self and not experience those two things as in conflict. And I'm still close enough to that experience that I want to tell that story the same way.
You would tell that story the same way?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. you know, if I were in another life phase completely and struggling with other issues of meaning in my life, I might tell that one differently too. But I'm not at the moment. I'm in the same life stage that I was when I was writing that.
Your husband passed away since we last
yes,
spoke, and I was very
that's
sorry
right.
to read about that. You just mentioned that you would tell your mother's story differently now, having experienced losing your husband as she had lost hers. What would be different in how you told her story now, based on
well,
what you've experienced?
Well, you know, at the time, before I'd had this experience, I attributed her excessive and overwhelming lifetime of grief as incomprehensible to me. I couldn't understand how she did not have the energy and drive as a powerful and very strong woman to get herself together and take up life again. Having lost my own husband, I can see what a temptation that is. Although it's not one I've succumbed to, I understand how it might happen.
My guest is Jill Kerr-Conway. She's written a new book about autobiography called When Memory Speaks. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jill Kerr-Conway, she's written two memoirs about her life, from her childhood in the Australian outback to becoming president of Smith College. Her new book is about autobiography. It's called When Memory Speaks. Would you choose a contemporary memoir that you felt was a particularly good example of the form? And tell us what you liked about it?
Yes. I think one that I absolutely love is Vivian Gornick's Fierce Attachments. It's a wonderfully witty, passionate analysis of a very troubled mother and daughter relationship. Gornick's mother is of Jewish immigrant stock, a committed left radical, locked up in a marriage with a husband with whom there's not much mutuality, although they're tied together by their left socialist principles. And when the father dies in his 40s, the mother, who never really seems to have felt deeply about him in a loving sense, takes on the role of the woman who has lost the love of her life, and she keeps the two children, son and daughter, in absolute thrall to her because she's so bereaved and tries to suffocate any movement toward independence on the part of the two children. And Gornick deals with this with exquisite humor and deep passion. So you're just slipping between laughter and grief every page that you turn. And Gornick's point at the end of this narrative is that the woman who construes herself as a romantic heroine and looks at the world as though life has cast her in a tragic role has so obscured her own motives for hanging on to these children and her wish for power over them that she's not even able to subject that to any kind of moral scrutiny. And that's the reason for Gornick's rage against her mother, whom she also loves, and she makes you feel all of that in a very powerful memoir.
So you, one of the things you liked about this, obviously, is how complicated the emotions are.
Yes.
Yeah. Choose a memoir for us, perhaps, that you don't really like and you think is an example of the form gone wrong.
The form gone wrong. Well, I think I would probably choose... I would choose The Kiss, I think. Catherine Harrison's story of her incestuous father.
Perhaps the most controversial... literary memoir of the recent past.
Absolutely. And she tells it like a fairy tale. I think of it as like a Grimm's fairy tale because, of course, she presents herself as having a spell cast on her as a teenager by her father's powerfully erotic kiss. And she presents herself then as incapable of exerting any will in the relationship that unfolds.
The incestuous relationship that unfolds.
Yes, absolutely. And she casts the story in fairy tale form because she says she's released from this spell and recovers her volition only after she's kissed her then-dead grandfather a kiss of farewell. And one is obviously a good kiss, the other is erotic. But she really treats herself like a very sick romantic heroine in this relationship, having no will, no volition, no moral sense to assess what's happening. And I find that very unsatisfactory.
Do you find it too tidy also?
Much too tidy. There must have been... good and bad parts of this horrible experience. There must have been moments of humor. There must have been moments of despair. But you don't really get that sense of a richly nuanced life.
A lot of people were troubled by how she told the story of incest, you know. What do you think was so troubling about it?
Oh, I think what troubled people was that she is an incest survivor who tells about the erotic attraction of the relationship and how deeply she was pulled into it. And, you know, stories of incest are meant to be stories from total victims who are not enjoying it. And she broke those codes, and more power to her for being honest about that. But she didn't tell a story in which the father is a fully developed character. He's his genitals and his eyes and his hands. That's all he is. And so the story lacks depth and ambiguity.
Now, I'm going to ask you to choose another memoir for us, this time a memoir from history that was particularly important in developing your interest in the form.
Oh, well, without any question, the most important was Jane Addams' 20 Years at Hull House, which every American schoolchild seems still to read. And her memoir was, along with many, many others of her generation, who were the first generation of American women to get access to graduate education, and they were the founders of all the women's professions and the people who were the great women reformers of the progressive era. And their memoirs had a tremendous impact on me because even though they told them in romantic form, they were stories about women who were absorbed in politics, saw themselves as shaping history, wanted to, and felt that it was important to. So they all had a tremendous impact on me.
Do you plan on writing another memoir?
One day I will, but you have to be in another stage of life from the one you're writing about in order to know what's significant. You know, we fuss a lot about experiences which at the time seem important and with hindsight seem not so important. And we often overlook at the time something that's very significant and shaping. So you have to be in another stage of life to know what the shape of your previous one was.
I think also when we're in a certain, when we're in the stage of life that we're talking or writing about, we're much more defensive about the actions that we took.
That's right.
We're much more involved in justifying what we've done.
That's right. I mean, that's why the memoirs of statesmen written right after they lose office are so terrible.
Yes, right. Well, Jill Kirk Conway, thank you very much for talking with us.
It's a great pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Jill Kirk Conway's new book about autobiography is called When Memory Speaks. Her own memoirs are called The Road from Corrain and True North.